Frederick Douglass once said, "If there is no struggle, there is no progress." Those who profess to favor freedom, yet depreciate agitation, are people who want crops without plowing the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the roar of its many waters. The struggle may be a moral one, or maybe a physical one, or maybe both. But it will be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. There are many histories of struggle within the healthcare industry. Histories of the struggle of new scientific breakthroughs, first reviled, then ridiculed, then finally embraced. Other histories that follow a struggle over access, over who received care, and the quality of the care they received. What ties these stories of struggle together is the activists surrendering their seconds and their spirits in pursuit of a new and different tomorrow. Welcome to Steps to Value, a podcast that explores the intersection of people, processes, and technology in healthcare as the industry moves towards a value-focused model. I'm your host, Adam Baser. As the healthcare industry prepares itself for new leadership at the federal, state, and local level, Steps to Value is taking an in-depth look at the always evolving relationship between healthcare and public policy. In today's episode, we'll study the impact advocacy can have on the policymaking process with Leslie Bruce, Director, Healthcare Leadership and Community Outreach at UC San Diego Extension. Leslie also shares her experiences mentoring future health IT leaders as part of our Women in Health IT series. All that and more coming up.
M17 is the meeting place for all things health IT. Experience over 300 education programs, more than 1,200 vendors, hundreds of special programs, and limitless networking opportunities. Collaborate with HIMSS and thousands of colleagues worldwide as you work to positively transform health and lives through IT. Register today at HIMSSconference.org. I'm here with Leslie Bruce, Director, Healthcare Leadership and Community Outreach at the University of California, San Diego Extension. Leslie, thanks for joining us today.
I'm delighted to be here.
Well, let's get right into it. From your perspective, when is HIT policy most effective?
Well, I think it's most effective when it represents a consensus of those affected. We often expect our elected officials and even policy leaders to solve these labyrinthine problems that we struggle with when, in fact, they can't possibly do that. And so it makes no sense for us to dump big problems on our legislators without solutions, or at least, you know, some kind of a proposed solution. So they're better off, we're better off when the stakeholders come together and forge their own solutions.
Yeah, and policymakers have so many different things that they have to pay attention to. It's impossible to be that deep in the weeds on all of these little nuances.
Absolutely, and the variety of issues that they face, let alone the depth. I mean, we really owe it to ourselves if we want to create good policy to vet it among ourselves and propose a solution to them.
Well, can you describe how your organization has supported efforts to increase participation of women in the HIT policymaking process?
Certainly. I think we've done that in three ways, actually. First of all, UC San Diego has supported efforts to increase the number of women in HIT in the first place. We are actually first in the nation for enrolling and graduating the most women in the STEM disciplines, science, technology, engineering, and math. And our proportion of STEM graduates, our women STEM graduates, is three times the national average. So that's the first thing. You've got to get women in HIT. You know, I mean, that's where you have to start. And then second, you know, we really promote employment of those women in any one of the 650 companies that UCSD has launched, or any other company. We want those women to be able to go there, be successful, and contribute to the conversation, which includes HIT policy. And then I think the third issue is we teach them, we give them opportunities to learn to effectively communicate with government. For instance, I teach politics and public policy of U.S. healthcare, and these courses both end either with a trip to our state capital or to Washington, D.C. for a week, where students have had advocacy skill building in the classroom, and now they're taking it to actual legislators, policymakers, and their staff, and they're advocating on issues of importance to them. And interestingly enough, we always meet with the ONC staff or some of the ONC staff when we're in D.C. And so a big shout out to Rebecca Freeman and Judy Murphy and others that we've met over the years in D.C. because I want our students to see women leading in HIT policy, and I want them to envision themselves doing the same thing.
I think you make a really good point, and the advocacy is more than just being passionate about something. It involves a completely different communication style and language and vocabulary, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely right. I think, you know, going back to our conversation earlier about how complex the issues are that are faced by our legislators and policymakers, we have to cut through a lot of clutter and be sure that we're not just shoveling every word we can think of at these people. We need to edit, and be laser-like in our precision of what we're asking them to do.
Well, let's turn to you a little bit here and get into how you first connected with HIT policy and education. What's your origin story?
Well, I would actually split it up into HIT and policy and education because they were three distinctly different parts of my career. When I got out of law school, it was really clear to me after 2 years of clerking that I did not want to practice law in the traditional sense. And I got into politics as fast as I could, and I loved it, absolutely loved it. And I went to work for a state legislator and became eventually her chief of staff. So I got to really know policy and advocacy and what worked and what didn't work. So that's really, the policy came first. Then I started getting interested in healthcare, and I was head of communications and governmental relations for the American Heart Association. Got to learn a lot about healthcare, and then went to Sharp Healthcare, one of the largest health systems in San Diego, doing government and community relations, and then recruited to UC San Diego Health Sciences also to do government and community relations. So that's really where the healthcare came in. And then education. When I was head of government and community relations for UC San Diego Health Sciences, I actually started teaching more formally. I had been doing it informally for, you know, over 15 years. But I started formally teaching advocacy skill building. And so then along comes the recession and all of these people out of work. And so I was teaching with Extension, and we decided to put in a grant to our local workforce investment board saying we would like, in light of the national push for electronic medical records, we would like to train underemployed IT workers, project managers, and clinicians to implement electronic medical records. So our grant got accepted, and I had 3 months to build the program, and I dedicated all of my time to it, and I became, you know, knew more about HIT than I ever thought I ever would at that point. But I was recruiting seasoned HIT leaders and practitioners to serve both as advisors to the curriculum and to serve as faculty. So that's really how I got into the field of HIT. And interestingly enough, at that time, I got to know Dave Roberts, who was vice president of government relations for HIMSS.
Right.
So he encouraged me to get involved, and I absolutely did.
Nice. Well, it sounds like you've had a nice collection of perspectives to get you where you are. And so how has your perspective on the environment for women in HIT changed since you first started in all of this? And if you can identify any challenges that have been overcome or some challenges that remain, that would be great too.
Sure. Well, you know, when I started this, when we started with that grant in 2009, it seemed like the majority of people trying to get into EMRs or EHRs were people from the telecom industry because they had suffered so greatly in the recession. So here they are, typical IT workers, and those are mostly men. And what was interesting that in the classroom, which was at least 50% women for our HIT program, I began to observe the critical voice of clinicians and healthcare workers, because 80% of healthcare workforce is women. So it's not too surprising that we would have so many in the classroom.
Right.
But the really beautiful thing was how quickly the instructors from industry picked up on the value of those female voices, and they soon started scouting talent in the classroom. So all of the nurses we had in the program were hired quickly, as were the female project managers and those with training experience, those who were good trainers. So I think, you know, a lot of the women did well and continue to do well, especially those with experience in the healthcare system. I think women in straight IT have had the hardest time breaking in, and I think there's lots of room for improvement because that's a really traditionally male field, and you know, they're just not a very welcoming culture, you know, to let women with great expertise in you know, hardcore IT, whether it's hardware or software, to get into that field. I think that's where we need to make some more strides.
Yeah, the bar seems to be set really high in order to get into the club sometimes.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you mentioned in your last comment, you mentioned the value of the female voice, the women's voice, and I just wanted to clarify a little bit with you that was that due to their expertise in healthcare, or
Absolutely.
Was there also something that women bring to this environment or the point of view that women have that adds something that's valuable?
I would have to agree with both of those things, actually. I would say both. First of all, to have knowledge of the clinical environment, you know, whether you're a nurse or a cardiology tech or, you know, whatever, even in the billing department, I mean, this is valuable expertise. And that when you look, though, you know, women have more traditionally been teachers, and so to find good trainers among the women was not difficult. And project managers, I think, women frequently have, you know, advanced degrees in multitasking. And these women project managers were really phenomenal, whether they, it's something, you know, that they have to do at home or whether they have a professional, experience in that. I think they have a knack.
So that's kind of the perfect segue into the next question. Again, kind of related to education, but now we're talking one-on-one. Did you have a mentor? Who was your first mentor?
Interesting. You should ask about that, because my first mentor really was the legislator I worked for. Her name is Lucy Calais. She is what you would call a stateswoman, and you don't even hear that term anymore. She had boundless energy, incredible integrity, and she modeled for me the attitude that where there's a will, there's a way. And she taught me to treasure democracy, that it's a participatory sport, and it works better when everybody gets in the game. And that, you know, frankly, with perseverance, anyone can make a difference.
Well, have you ever become a mentor? Are you now a mentor yourself?
I am. You know, I have the absolute joy of mentoring students. I have undergraduate students, I have graduate students, and I have working professionals. And that gives me great opportunity to mentor, you know, men and women of all ages, you know, whatever they're seeking to do. And it's, you know, one of the joys of my career.
All right. What advice would you give someone listening to our podcast who says, this sounds really interesting, I know I could do that, how do I get into this? What would you tell them?
When you say you want to get into this, what is it you mean specifically?
Health information technology, healthcare,
okay.
The whole, you're in an interesting position in that you do education, but you've got a legislative background and you know the HIT. But I think from that situation, you probably have a pretty good perspective on what some of the entry points might be to get into the technology side.
Absolutely. You know, I tell students who want to learn HIT that to look at it as an addition to every everything, the other thing that they are, everything else that they bring to the table. This is an added arrow in the quiver. If they have experience as clinicians or as IT people or project managers or that kind of thing, it's computer science. I mean, obviously, software engineers are worth their weight in gold at this point. That look at this, and I think one of the most important things they can do is really research the kinds of companies that they're interested in working for and looking at the jobs that are open there, whether they choose to apply then and there or they're qualified, but see what those qualifications are. Look at what that means. Do I want to sit at a computer all day? What will I be doing? Will I be working with nurses? Will I be working with doctors? Do I like that? We need people to be able to try these experiences on, whether it's through internships or all mentorships. I think there's a lot of mentors who are open to job shadowing and that kind of thing, to really help them understand the kind of environment they want to work in and the kinds of jobs that they're really suited to, their personality is suited to. And then once they feel that they know what the skills and knowledge requirements are, go get those. Go get the ones. Identify the gaps in their own experience and go get those skills and knowledge so that they will be competitive for those positions.
And it isn't at all like the 1950s where you took a position and kind of stayed there for a while doing the same thing. This evolves so fast that it's just a matter of getting in and starting, and your life and your knowledge and your role continues to evolve as technology does.
Absolutely. This is the kind of profession where you get the tiger by the tail. Because,
right,
as you said, it is moving so fast and things are changing so quickly. And you have to have an appetite for that, frankly. I mean, you need a little bit of an appetite for uncertainty. And a willingness to adapt to change, because that is the only constant in this particular field.
Well, Leslie, do you have time for one more question?
Sure.
Okay. We ask this of all of our guests. We frequently talk about people, technology, the interaction. Right now, we're talking about people, education, how to get into this field, what it means to the world, and healthcare. What's your favorite technological invention, and what do you think its impact has been on our culture?
My favorite, I would have to say, is the internet. It puts vast knowledge at our fingertips, and education is power. And with the fact that the internet gives access to education and information to more people, I think enables people to learn and better themselves and improve their quality of life. And whether, I mean, I teach an online class, even in the face-to-face classes, the assignments are go to the internet and do this, read that, watch this video, whatever. I mean, it's just incredible the amount of information available to us. I think the trick is, of course, to not let it control us, and so that we do continue to get exercise and we don't lose our ability to reflect and read long documents, and that we are wise about the veracity of the source of the information we're getting. We don't let it diminish our attention span or disconnect us with friends and family. But I think if we are wise in its use, I think it is absolutely the most impactful and certainly my favorite technological advancement.
Thank you for sharing your wisdom on that topic. Leslie Bruce is Director, Healthcare Leadership and Community Outreach at the University of California, San Diego Extension. Leslie, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, what are the most important areas for healthcare stakeholders to advocate for in the years ahead? Please send us your thoughts as a voice memo or an email, and we'll play them on the air at the end of our next episode. You can send your comments to value@hims.org. We'd like to thank our guest, Leslie Bruce, Director of Healthcare Leadership and Community Outreach at UC San Diego Extension, for sharing her perspective on the role that advocacy can play in shaping healthcare-related policy. Steps to Value is a production of HIMS North America. Steps to Value is co-produced by Rod Pahowski. I'm Adam Baser, and see you next time on Steps to Value.